Well, the Reverend Jan Carlson Bull, who is part of the Coalition for Democracy, Unity, and Equality Justice, is our special guest, and this is all about something that she did. Yes, visited every Connecticut state senator's home on Valentine's Day to urge them to increase taxes on the rich to avoid budget cuts. Reverend Bull, good morning, good morning. Hello, are you there?
I am here.
Good morning, Reverend Carlson Bull. Brad Davis, I'm Dan Lavallo, as you know, Touchpoints Rehab Interview Chair. Give us a little background as to what happened on Valentine's Day, Reverend.
What happened on Valentine's Day, that under the umbrella of the Do Justice Coalition, and Do stands for Democracy, Unity, Equality, it's a coalition that's made up of 60 different organizations across the state of Connecticut, organizations such as the Connecticut AFL-CIO, a number of unions, different congregations, United Action Connecticut, which has worked for universal health care and immigrant justice, the Council of American Islamic Relations, the Connecticut Citizen Actions Group.
Let's get down to what we did.
What we did, let me explain what we did. We did a post-Valentine's Day visit to 31 of our 36 state senators. And in each of these districts, delegations of constituents, including me, had a team captain. I was a team captain for the 9th district, whose senator is Paul Doyle. And we visited our senators, some of us at their homes, some of us at nearby restaurants or coffee shops. What we did, not just I, but what we did in the 9th district is we met with Paul Doyle at the Dunkin' Donuts in Wethersfield, not very far from his home, and gave him a very large poster, Valentine, with the message, have a heart, it's not too late, and a six-point agenda that we urged him to support.
Reverend, what this group was doing. You want to really go after the rich and tax them much more. Is that correct?
That is not quite a correct focus. How it's done is up to our legislators. I certainly have no problems with taxing the rich more. I'm not rich, but I would be willing to pay higher taxes.
You would be willing to pay higher taxes?
Let's back up just a little bit, okay? This is for the common good of everybody. It's for the common good of people who are quite wealthy and people who are very poor.
How is it common good for the people who are wealthy? Because that's really, if you look at the whole thing that you're doing, that's who you're going after.
We're not going after anyone. What we're doing is bringing people together for the common good. And it is in the best interest of people who are very wealthy to have access to excellent health care, for their children to have access to quality public education. If the children of the very wealthy are in public schools, or whether they're not, it is to their benefit to have excellent teachers, excellent facilities, and to have classmates who don't come to school hungry and who are prepared to learn and who contribute as much as any rich child.
Reverend, I'm confused. I think we understand all of that. I mean, everybody would like to see a quality education, quality health care, but we're trying to wrap our minds around dollar figures. I mean, you're part of a church, and I'm sure you have a budget. How much money should be spent for a quality education, quality health care? What should we be spending?
I'm not going into that level of detail. Enough so that each child has the resources that they need, including special ed children, and there are many wealthy people who have children with special needs. Enough so that they have the resources that they need to learn in a safe environment. I'm not going to get into budget figures.
We don't want you to, but what we're trying to say here, and the story is that you want to tax those who have money, okay, so that there won't be any layoffs, so that everybody is happy. I mean, in a conjunctive way here.
In an ideal world, yes, of course. Of course. And there are wealthy people who are glad to pay their fair share.
So why don't they?
Pardon?
Why don't they? I mean, why do they need, why can't they just write out a check and say, look it, I want to donate more than what I'm paying in taxes?
That's charity. That's charity. That's not solidarity. The difference between charity and solidarity is that charity is at the whim of the person who is the beneficiary.
We're not trying to attack you, but I must say that there's an element in this country that believes when you're talking about solidarity and the common good, it sparks reminders of socialism or communism.
Yeah, absolutely, that's what it is.
So, you know, let me ask you, sparks reminders of socialism. I understand that that is a word that is spoken to basically get a reaction of, oh, no, we don't want to go there.
Well, it is socialism.
Public education is a socialistic enterprise. Is that bad?
Well, we're trying to change
something.
It. We're
did
trying
you go to
change
a public
it.
School? Did you go to a public school?
I did.
And I did,
well,
too.
Okay, and you know what? So you benefited from socialism.
Well, one of the issues right now is you're not getting the public school education you once got, and so people are trying to diversify the public school system by allowing for vouchers and more charter schools
to get away
from that socialistic approach.
Let me ask you this question. Are you for, you know, I think that we should have not just public education, but I think we should have vouchers for those, if they're in schools that are not making it, and there are many that aren't, that they have an opportunity to go to another school. And many in the African-American community are now saying that their children are not getting what they should get. They're getting shortchanged, and that's what they would like.
I don't think one can generalize about the so-called African-American community.
We have talked to many of them.
Excuse me. I'm guessing that you're not African-American to speak about African-Americans as those. Is that correct?
We're not African-American, but we have spoken to many African-American parents in Hartford, for example.
Yes.
Who much would rather have a voucher system.
Okay, let me explain something to you, okay? A voucher system basically takes away money from the public schools, and it basically allows people who have a great deal of privilege and choice to say where their children will go. My own children went to a public school in a district that had an intra-district magnet system. It works wonderfully. It is a wonderful alternative to the so-called voucher program. It's completely public. It's a magnet school system in which every school has a specialty, and
we're coming up on a hard break. I don't know if you can hold. We'd love to continue the conversation. If you have another few minutes, and you can hold for 5 minutes, can you do that?
Yes, I can do that.
Great. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Coming up on news.
Coming up 7:30. We got the news coming up, and then we'll be back with the Reverend Jan Carlson Bull, part of the Coalition for Democracy, Unity, and Equality Justice. Back in just a few minutes. And we've got a very special guest, and we thank her for staying with us, the Reverend Jan Carlson Bull, part of the Coalition for Democracy, Unity, and Equality Justice.
Reverend, can you explain to our audience now, do justice. Is this also part of a nationwide group or movement?
Not to my knowledge. I'm engaged in the Connecticut Do Justice Coalition. Mm-hmm. So that's a question I can't really give you an accurate answer to, but not to my knowledge.
Right.
And I do have an understanding of certain other states and what they're about. But there are certainly similar coalitions across the country who are advocating their state legislators for what is basically a set of human rights, agenda-specific human rights.
What would that agenda be, again, human rights?
What that agenda is, and I'll give you the specific six-point agenda, are good jobs and fair wages. I don't think Most people would argue with that, except if it comes down to specifics, such as a $15 an hour minimum wage, universal access to quality public education. We talked about that with rather different perspectives. A very vibrant and a fairly funded public sector, such as meaningful property tax reform. Property tax is regressive. Racial, gender, and ethnic justice. That's a very significant umbrella. Fair housing laws, expansion of the DREAM Act. Democracy in our state and our workplaces, such as campaign finance reform. And healthy lives in a healthy environment. Affordable health care. Speaking out for the Affordable Care Act and Medicare and Medicaid. And we all breathe the same air, I believe. So basically supporting all of the initiatives for conservation and a clean, carbon-free energy. That is the six-point agenda that we took to our state senators the day before yesterday.
Well, this is, as you explain this, school choice, and I'm talking about what I said earlier, Reverend, school choice, and we have talked, and everybody says, well, it's the African-American, yes, and we are very close to that community. In fact, I go to the First Cathedral. I'm a member, the largest African-American church in New England, and we talk about these things. And school choice is very, very popular with the members of that community that I've talked to. And I can't understand why the unions and why programs like the one you have is not for the kind of school choice. If the school can't do it, the kid gets a voucher and the parent sends that child to the school that they choose. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that is that the tax system supporting schools gets upset. And what happens is that those who are more privileged economically tend to have greater access to sending their children to schools exactly where they want to, and it approaches privatization, which undermines the school system. Now, there are charter systems that are public school systems. Several years ago, I wrote a paper on charter schools. The idea took off in Minnesota several years ago, and at that point, it was understood that charter schools would be public schools. One form of that is a magnet school system. An intra-district magnet school system where different schools have different specialties, etc. And kids are bused. And by the way, my kids were bused and they loved it. It was fun. They loved it to go to certain schools in the community where we raised them. A magnet school system is a public school system. It enriches the curriculum for everyone and gives all children, black, brown, white, African-American, Asian, multiracial, etc., the opportunity to go to school in an environment that feels much more like the real world, if indeed our children live in a community that is even moderately diverse.
Okay. And Reverend, we're running out of time here. That's why I want to cover a couple of other things. Now, obviously, you're for raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. But
yes.
In a sense, isn't that a ruse? Because that wouldn't happen until 2022, and the people who need this $15 an hour minimum wage, they need it now, not 5 years down the road.
We are in complete agreement about that. We absolutely are. I agree. I think it needs to happen now.
In fact, there's
one group that advocates a minimum wage of $20 an hour.
Okay.
But that would do to business? Does anybody know what that would do to business? Or
yes,
don't they care?
Yes, I do. It would increase retention. It would increase worker motivation.
And it would increase the businessman.
And it would allow workers to come to work without having to worry about whether they were coming with a flu or something like that and spreading germs and undermining the quality of where you go for, say, a hamburger or a cup of coffee or wherever. And it would actually increase the well-being of business overall. Business is not just about owners. It's about employees.
Reverend, but we hear from businesses that, and some are already starting to do it, you go to $15 an hour minimum wage, we're going to go to automation.
That's
we're
right.
hearing from the hedge fund people, you come after us, we're going to leave the state of Connecticut. So then how does the state benefit?
Well, I would call that blackmail. And if there are, hedge fund managers basically leverage their privilege and their power. And when privilege and power are not used for the common good, I would call that just basically wrong. I understand that you probably have ethical standards for yourself and your family. And tell me how you understand that as ethical.
Well, what's wrong with how is a business which decides that it's just too expensive to do business in a state, we're going to move to another state, like a GE, how is that considered unethical?
How is that considered unethical?
Yeah.
By thinking about, what may eventually happen in that other state. That's pragmatic. That doesn't have to do with ethics necessarily. And also to understand that a satisfied workforce increases the quality and the productivity of that particular business.
And you don't call this socialism?
I don't think it matters whether we call it socialism or capitalism or whatever.
Well,
I mean, what do you call it?
I call it socialism.
Uh-huh. And tell me what you have.
Well, number one,
excuse me. You're basically putting a label on it that you anticipate your listeners to cringe over, because all of us have been conditioned to cringe over the term socialism.
Reverend, we don't have time. Unfortunately,
I'd like to do a debate someday.
We'd love to have you in studio. Would you be willing to come in studio sometime where we could have an hour to talk about this?
And also have someone who doesn't agree with that system.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay,
that's fine.
Great.
Oh, we'd love to have you in, really. You were kind enough to come on today, and I know you've got a busy schedule, but Reverend, we'll be in touch, and thanks very much for being on the program today.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Reverend Jan Carlson Bull, part of the Coalition for Democracy, Unity, and Equality Justice.